Emma, thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Are you nervous?
Not too bad. A little bit, but...
A little bit. You seem to be composed. Like, you're a very well-composed human being. I see that in you. I don't know why.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I try to be.
You seem to have your shit together is what I'd like to say.
That's the goal.
Well, I know in watching your social, you're a mechanic for the ski lifts.
Yeah, that's
correct. Is that small, considered small engine repair?
Not so much that. I guess we do some diesel work, but mostly what I'm doing is like ski lift grips and line work and not so much heavy equipment per se, but.
It's like technical stuff though.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah.
But you, I see you do that in your, I mean, usually when you fall off a ski lift, you impact the snow and powder,
right.
But you're up on the ski lift 20 plus feet in the air.
Yeah.
And it's just mountain.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it looks beautiful. It looks amazing.
I love it.
So I met you at a little thing that we had, and we were talking about trauma. And that's my interest in talking to you today, is kind of sharing your experiences, even the traumatic event that we had discussed, but also kind of the perspective to help other people, which I think is important for these kind of conversations. Like people, these are like the cliff notes on life. For people, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like an autobiography or biography of some of the things that happened to you, but would greatly benefit other people that are going through similar circumstances. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? Where did you grow up? How was your childhood?
I was originally from Moab, Utah. I lived there until I was about 7 years old. I guess grew up single mother household with grandparents. Had a really good childhood. You know, when you're a kid, you don't really know about any of the hard parts of this world. You know, you don't know about debt. You don't know anything to do with that. So I grew up kind of carefree, and my relationship with my mother and the memories that I do have and in other people's comments was incredibly strong. And I admire her more, I guess, every day for how devoted she was to me despite her own hardship. But I guess I grew up just, you know, a little wild Moab kid running around, hiking a lot. Hanging out with friends, kind of almost one with nature down there in a way, you know, because to walk up the street and go hike up the hillside, or just love to be out and about. I wasn't on my phone, you know, I didn't even have a phone. Smartphones I don't even think existed back then, but it was a very natural way of life. You know, I was detached from a lot of the shit that we have these days, you know, that I see kids stuck with. So I'm very grateful for that. I lived there till I was about 7 years old.
So you live with your mom. And who was a single mother? It was just you, right? No,
yeah,
no
just,
brothers, no sisters.
Just me.
And then we had talked about this life-changing event that kind of changed everything. I'm assuming even the point in which you left Moab.
Yeah, that's correct.
So kind of paint the picture for me. What do you remember about that night, if anything? And then tell me what happened.
So I remember one of our traditions, I guess, growing up was we were really big into fishing. And so we'd always go Sunday afternoons, we're for fishing, and we'd head up to either Hidden Lake up in the La Salles, or we'd go just on the Green River because it was a 5-minute drive from our house. And it was just like any other Sunday, you know, we finished our church service that we were at and we're headed up to go fishing. And I remember just leaving to go do that. And then it was around noon or 1 o'clock. Based more off of reports I've read since than my own memory, but we were hit with a drunk driver who ended up killing my mother and my grandparents that were with us and leaving me and himself as the only survivors from the incident. And I have a lot of, you know, fragmented, some vivid memories, you know, some are like emotionally, subconsciously rooted that have surfaced since then. But yeah, I just remember my life changed that day, obviously. And I think in hindsight, it's changed for the better, but it's been an interesting journey picking all that apart, you know, in the couple decades since.
You were 7 years old at the time and you lost your whole world. I mean, your world was your mother. Your world was your grandparents.
Right.
And that was your family.
Yeah.
That was everything. Do you remember a lot about the moment or moments right after the accident? Do you remember much about it?
As far as like in that moment, I remember coming to in the vehicle at a moment, and I have weird memories of that. And just from a child's perspective, you know, I was just like, oh, everybody's asleep. You know, that's weird. I'm going to get out of the car. Like, that's kind of just a funny. And I think you got to find humor in it or don't heal. So to me, that's kind of funny now. Maybe it's a little morbid to some, but.
Because you're just a kid and you're thinking like, well, how did
like,
this happen?
Hey, wake up. Like, what the hell's going on here? And I was like, well, whatever. I'm going to get out, you know? And I don't actually remember getting out. And I personally believe through just my own faith that that was God's hand, quite frankly, being able to get out of there. And so that part's completely blank. And I don't really seek out any memory for that. I feel fine with that one, but I do remember being outside of my vehicle and just looking around me and seeing, you know, I mean, it's probably warped in my mind now. I've since been back to the scene maybe once or twice in my life, but I remember seeing like police cars and other cars and just people were busy attending to stuff. I started walking down the street and I remember coming to a black vehicle that in hindsight was probably an officer, my guess, somebody that was able to be that close to the scene. But I remember getting into her car and her telling me that her name was Cindy. And I remember her trying to get me to drink a glass of water. She was like, hey, here's some water for you. And I was like, I don't want water. Like, that's horrible. And to this day, I don't drink enough water. So I guess maybe it stems from that. But I just remember that. And I was like, lady, what is your deal? Like, just leave me alone. I just want to sit here. You know, I don't know what's going on. I want to sit here. And then everything's kind of blank from that point forward. People have told me I was awake on the flight to the hospital, but I don't remember
it. You were injured.
Yeah. So miraculously, I, in my opinion, got by with almost no injuries. I broke my nose, two cheekbones and two jawbones, and then bruised my spleen, I think mildly. And then obviously mild concussion from that too. But considering all the factors, I feel like I got off very lucky, you know, but I think I was very blessed in that situation. None of us had seatbelts or anything either.
Really?
Yeah.
Where were you at in the car?
I was in the back seat behind the driver's side.
Where were the position of your family members?
My mother was driving, and then my grandfather was in the front passenger. My grandmother was in the back passenger.
With you?
Yeah.
And none of you were wearing seatbelts?
No.
Because it's a sunny afternoon.
Yeah, just the old Ford Bronco. We were just out doing our thing. You know, we'd done it 100 times before.
Do you understand, at looking at the investigation and some of the things that you've put together, how the accident happened and what technically happened on that day?
More or less, yeah. I've looked into that. The gentleman that ended up hitting us and killing us was currently on parole, I think, for his maybe seventh DUI.
Seventh DUI.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of legal stuff behind that, too, where he wasn't even supposed to be able to drive. But somehow got behind the wheel. I think he had open containers in his car, had been drinking all morning. And we hit head on, I think it's like Interstate 128 in Moab.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think based on what I've read, I believe that my mom tried to hit the brakes, but obviously there was a lot of impact. Our car rolled several times into the side of, I think, the rock face that was there or something, or rolled by it. I believe his car did not roll. He was driving a big white pickup, which I actually remember seeing. Another reason to drive a truck, right? But
And you said, you said something that's interesting. You said he killed us, like, including you in that vehicle.
I didn't even think about that.
I don't know if it's subconscious. And I'm
maybe
just,
that was just subconscious.
Do you feel like, I mean, I feel this almost brings me to tears, but I feel like this, connection with you and your mother.
Yeah.
And it's like, that moment that happened, your world up until that point was your mother. And it sounds like it was a good childhood for you.
It was
growing up.
Yeah.
And it, all of that gets stripped away.
Kind of funny you bring that up too, because one of my memories that I don't know how accurate it is, you know, time and trauma plays tricks on your brain, but the last thing I remember saying, and this could be an entire figment of my imagination, but I remember looking through the front windshield and kind of seeing that and almost like knowing that something, it was weird because the last thing I remember saying was, I love you, which that might be my brain filling in some gaps for what I wish would have happened, or it could have been reality. But that one, that sits well with me to know that that was potentially the last interaction I had with some family.
What happened to the guy who hit you guys?
He's, I believe, pled guilty to two. They dropped one account of manslaughter, but he got vehicular homicide in the second degree. He was charged with, I believe, 3 counts, did a plea bargain, got 2 counts, plus I think there were a whole bunch of other infractions that they'd charged him with, just trying to stack it up, you know, open containers, substances, all that kind of stuff. And he's still currently serving prison time here in Utah, 5 to 15 years per homicide charge. He's been in there about half of his potential time right now. So he's tried for parole back in, I believe, 2009 and denied. I had nothing to do with that one. Obviously, I was younger, didn't really know anything about that. But in the next little bit, he could potentially be trying for parole again. And that's something that I've weighed maybe getting more involved in, or maybe having to be involved in, whether I choose to or not.
Well, how does that make you feel? I mean, it seems like a minor charge for a major crime.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's not appropriate. It doesn't seem fitting. It doesn't seem fair or right or just. One, I think you should be involved. I don't think there should be hesitancy in that. I think it's important, especially as somebody who's a surviving member of that family that was destroyed. But what's your take on him as a person?
You know, it's funny you bring this up. That's been a major thing that I've been kind of talking about, I guess, with myself over the last little bit, is for some reason I have this deep feeling of forgiveness for him. And I don't want to say that in a way that makes me seem like, oh, I'm this great person, I forgive everyone. Far from that. But there's just something deep inside of me that wants him to know that I forgive him. And I think that could change situationally. For me, this experience ended up opening so many more doors than I ever thought was possible. So it was a tragic event, but it's been the biggest blessing in my life. So I think it's easy for me to say that I want to forgive him, because he's in a really twisted way brought about a lot of good things for me. And, you know, 15, 16 years, 17, can't remember how long it's been. I feel like it's a very long time to, you know, have to pay for something. And this is a thought I've been mulling over a lot, especially because could be due for parole. You know, it's things I've had to think about. Should I ever have to go and speak or weigh in on that? And should my voice have any bearing on that decision? It's been one that has been difficult for me, because in my heart of hearts, I want everyone to be forgiven and to, I know what it's like to be forgiven. You know, obviously I've never killed somebody, but the feeling of forgiveness and of, you know, being whole again is, I think, very both spiritual and just good for people, you know, and I want other people to be able to have that. And so it's a hard point to be at, because on the one hand, legally, I mean, there's a lot of stuff behind that. And also, I don't want someone who's already had that many instances against them to turn around and do the same thing and hurt somebody who might be not in nearly as good of a position as myself after. You know, most people that are involved in accidents that kill families, it ruins their life, you know, and I recognize that, and I feel deeply for them, because for me, it's been the opposite. But I think that's kind of a rare situation. So on the one hand, I really want him to know that he's forgiven. But I also think, you know, there's justice and mercy. You know, there's mercy of forgiveness, but there's also justice of, you know, we do have to pay for our choices in life. You know, we can't pick our consequences, but we can pick our choices. And I think just because you want to have mercy on somebody doesn't excuse behavior. You know, it's kind of a difficult point that I've mulled over for a long time. I don't really think about him or about any of that or blame or anything all that often. Because, you know, my life has been good since, you know, I've enjoyed life. So I'm not bitter. I'm not upset about what happened. It's more about trying to help other people at that point, you know, to avoid that situation or to navigate, I guess, that area more or less.
What happened to you after the accident? Because it seems like abruptly your life changes there, yeah, and you're still in the hospital. And then do they hand you over to the state? Like what happens?
So for me, at least, I was never kind of in limbo like a lot of people find themselves in. You know, I was never at an orphanage or anything like that. Had a lot of family still that was immediately involved, and a lot of prayers and thoughts and discussions went into that. And it was very quickly decided who I would end up living with. My parents now, who are wonderful, and I could not have asked for a better outcome, but it was decided relatively quickly. So there was never really any question of what was going to happen with me, which I think is a huge blessing. And it just felt very natural.
Was that a family that just adopted you?
So my dad and I are actually related. I'm really bad at all the ties with cousins and everything. I've got way too many, but He and I believe, are cousins of some sort, not very far back. So it's pretty close family line to my mom.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. And
they stepped up immediately and said, we'll take her.
Yeah. It was, you know, I mean, I had a lot of family that, I love all of them dearly, that were willing. The way that worked out, I think, was best case scenario for all of us, honestly.
Did you end up going to the funeral?
I did not. No, I believe I was still in the hospital or recovering when that happened. I actually don't remember anybody ever telling me that my mother had passed, which is interesting, or my grandparents. It's like somebody must have, but I just kind of knew, and I never really questioned it or brought it up or anything. I just kind of knew that it was a thing that had happened and that I was moving forward at that point.
Do you remember any of the accident, like any instances of you rolling over, or are there any flash moments of memories?
As far as like impact and nothing. Rolling, no, it's all after everything had come to a standstill that I have.
Intermittent memories.
Yeah.
You pick up a life, and I'm assuming that starts after you get out of the hospital.
Yeah.
Which was that a long recovery for you?
It was, I think, 4 days in the ICU was all. So
yeah,
relatively short. And then just told me not to be too rowdy and play too hard, which is really hard when you're 7 years old. You want to go play with all your new cousins. But yeah, it was relatively quick and easy recovery. So
did you feel any sorrow and pain? I mean, you were 7 years old, but do you remember feeling or having memories of feeling this deep sorrow for the loss that you experienced?
I really cognitively did not feel really anything for quite some time. And there were points at which I would, probably a little bit older, I was probably several years after the accident, but I would go talk to my dad and I'd be like, you know, other people will talk to me and they'll express like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm always like, I'm fine. Like, what's the deal? And I was concerned at one point because I didn't really feel any of those feelings. You know, I mean, I think there's a difference between emotion and feelings, but feelings were just not there. And I think subconsciously emotions were, and it's taken me a long time and a lot of hindsight to really piece those together. I finally realized it when I was speaking to a professor at the university I went to for psychology. It was a psychology class, and she talked about trauma in children and how that manifests and how sometimes they relive it in dreams versus conscious, like seeing things consciously. And I remember going up to her after class and just being like, hey, so for the last, you know, for about 10 or 12 years of my life following this traumatic event, I had these really like dark dreams that just felt ominous, and they didn't really have a plot, no resolution. They were just kind of dark and ominous. And she just kind of looks at me and she was like, yeah, that's definitely a thing. Like, you should probably go talk to somebody. Oh, and I was like, man. Oh, okay, well, I'm fine now. I don't have them anymore. And she was just like, yeah, that's totally a thing. I was like, hey, I'm not crazy. Like, that isn't normal. And, but I'd kind of stopped having those once I was more conscious of them. And I'd worked on like thinking about different things, you know, but.
What do you think the point of those were?
I think that, and a lot of this is just based off of different readings I've done in years since and could be wrong or right, but I think a lot of it is at that age, you know, your brain obviously isn't fully developed or even close to that. And I think trying to consciously recognize things and process those isn't usually in play at that age. And I think to process what I'd experienced, my subconscious, I think, was resorting to these dreams where at that age, you can't really express what you've been through or how you're feeling, but in these dreams, it was just this vagueness and this darkness, and just, they were just ominous. And kind of, I think that's why I've had a rocky relationship with sleeping, you know, since, and I've formed better habits now, but for a long time, I didn't sleep that well. And looking back, I was like, yeah, it would make sense if every time you have a dream, it's a nightmare. You don't want to go to sleep that much. Like, that sucks. And, but I think that was my way of processing what had happened, and my brain trying to figure out what had happened and process those emotions and those feelings and things that had happened without being able to express that at that age.
Are you, I mean, it's been a long time since this happened. Are you now feeling like you're figuring it out? It seems like you're on the back end of what seems like an overcoming of a lot of obstacles, and you are learning the hard lessons learned along the way. Therapy helped, and then you get to the place you're at now and you seem different. Is that because you've already traveled the long road?
Absolutely. I would say that's pretty spot on. I think, you know, I've felt all these things. I've kind of processed all these things, and I feel like everybody to some extent experiences trauma or something hard in their life. And I think that shapes who they become, and I think that shapes their future. And I think it never fully goes away. And I don't think you can ever fully learn everything there is to learn about yourself or about things that have happened. But I feel like at this point in my life now, I would say at the tail end, like you said, you know, I've processed a lot of things. I feel like I have the information and the account of everything that happened pretty concrete. And I recognize a lot of the reasons why I am the way that I am. And I think the forward motion from that is like using that to benefit yourself and to grow from what you've been through. Because if you just stay in that cycle of just reliving these things over and over and just wallowing in your own victimhood, that you're never going to get past that. You know, you're never going to really advance at a point because you're just going to be so caught up on what's happened that you're not going to look at where you're going. And I try to live my life now in a way that I'm focused on where it's going and where it's at, not on something that happened years and years ago. You know, I think it's foolish not to recognize things that have been traumatic for people. Like, I think if you just try to brush them to the wayside, I did that for years, you know, and for a while I was proud of it. You know, it was almost like an ego boost to be like, hey, I've been through this horrible shit, and like, it doesn't bother me. It's fine, you know? And then you get to a point where you're like, yeah, it does bother me, and that's okay. And we can work through that. And then once you've worked through it, you can almost like put that on a shelf and be like, yeah, this thing happened to me, but it's no longer like emotionally charged event. It's more of a factual, hey, this happened. But this is where I'm at now. And it's a different book. It's a different chapter. You're at a different point in your life moving forward, you know, and you can use that. You can reference it, and you can use it, I think, to your own detriment. For some people, I've seen that happen and it's heartbreaking. Or you can use that to kind of shape where you're going to, and maybe reference again when something weird happens. Like, maybe you react weirdly to something. You're like, oh, that wasn't the norm for other people, you know, but you can be like, okay, well, what's happened in my past? Let's take a glance. And you're like, okay, this makes sense now. Go forward with it and make it better, if that makes any sense, you know?
No, it makes a lot of sense. You were skeptical of therapy.
Yeah.
And then you went to it. And what helped you about therapy? What was it specifically in the specific techniques that made you more aware of yourself and the circumstance that you were in?
So I didn't end up going to any counseling or any kind of therapy until it was probably 15 or so years after the fact. You know, I was talking to family, and they were like, you seem like you're in a good place now. And I was like, honestly, I am in a good place. I feel awesome. And they were like, well, I heard this seminar. You should just go check into therapy. Try, see if you can do EMDR, which is like eye motion desensitization or something. It's not hypnosis. In my head, though, I was like, this is some hokey hypnosis Woo-woo bullshit. Stuff. I don't buy into that. That's stupid. But I finally was like, whatever, it can't hurt. You know, I'll go check it out. And I went with an open mind, but I did have a little bit of skepticism to start out. I was like, okay, I'm going to see if this is a waste of time. I'm like, either way, I'm sure it doesn't hurt me to talk about things. And ended up going to that. And it was honestly life-changing. Like, I would say that was the point at which I didn't realize I needed to get that much more control over my life, but it gave me that. And it forced me into this setting where to really get something out of it, I had to put in work, but I also had to let myself be vulnerable and let myself feel all of these feelings and think about things that were uncomfortable that I had just, I mean, egotistically kind of brushed away and been like, no, it's fine. It doesn't bother me. I'm a strong person. I'm okay. And I remember at one point I just did, I think, like 6 sessions. And thankfully was meeting with a psychologist or a therapist who was incredibly talented and incredibly aware of trauma and of EMDR treatment. And it's basically like a cognitive talk therapy, you know, for people who don't know what that is. And then they have like impulses that you can like feel in your hands. It sounded really weird to me on paper, but I gave it a shot. And you just start by talking about an event or something, and they'll start you talking about whatever comes to mind. And then the therapist kind of singles out one thing that stands out to them for whatever reason. Maybe it's how I said it, or they'll pick something and they'll be like, okay, now just close your eyes, sit there, and just really, really think about this and let yourself feel however your body wants to feel about whatever thing they picked out that I had said. And for a lot of them, I would sit there and be like, all right, like, let's just get going. Like, let's pass the time. This doesn't bother me. And then they'd be like, okay, well, how do you feel? And I'm like, I feel fine with that. Like, no big deal. Like, I'm wasting my time. And then there were a couple points, though, that they would bring up, and I'd be like, I don't think that's an issue. And they were like, okay, well, I want you to actually sit with that and think about it. And I remember at one point, they brought up the topic of guilt, which was kind of funny to me, because I was like, it's not my fault that we got hit by a drunk driver. Like, that has nothing to do with me. And I had, though, in the past thought about, well, it was probably my idea to push that we would go fishing this day. Maybe I pushed the envelope to have that happen. And I thought about that years ago, and I was like, no, that's foolish. I didn't cause this. And but they made me sit with that. They're like, think about how you would feel if you had caused this, like experience that guilt. And I was like, that's weird. But seconds into me closing my eyes and thinking about that, I completely fell apart. And I was angry at the time for it, because I didn't want to lose my composure. And I hated that feeling of like a loss of control. And I was like, why am I feeling this way? Like, consciously, I know it's not my fault. I know that a 7-year-old kid, 6-year-old kid could not cause these events to happen. But something subconsciously had sat for a long time with that guilt. And it was only in that setting that we really brought it to the surface and pretty much forced me to feel those emotions. And to, at one point, I was so upset that I was like trying to not cry and just holding back everything. And the therapist was like, no, you have to let yourself feel these things. Like, you're safe. Just let your guard down for a minute. And once I did, and it was like I felt all those subconscious things that had built up for so long, but then feeling them and then talking about them after in a logical and analytical setting, which is what I was more comfortable with, because that removes a lot of the feeling, and that was comfortable for me. But once we did both of those things, I was able to process, hey, this is not my fault. You know, I got past that, and it put together a lot of pieces. Like, in the past in life, if I'd made a little mistake, I always felt horrible. And I was like, why does my guilt feel so bad? That's so weird. And at one point he was like, yeah, well, you have the guilt of 3 people's death that you're tacking on to every other little thing you do. And I think that was just life-changing to realize and to process that on a conscious level. You know, subconsciously, I'd clearly been feeling it because I'd reacted that way. And I'd done so for years, but to consciously make that, like, I guess, prevalent and to actually discuss it, I was able through that to just move on from that and to realize this isn't my fault, you know, and I can't consciously understand that, but something inside of me has believed that for so long that I need to change how I move forward. And since then, I've been able to live my life entirely different. You know, I live it without feeling guilty for things that are not my fault or little things that are my fault. I'm like, I can fix that. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm a horrible person. It's like, hey, I made a mistake. We all do. Like, let's just fix it and go forward. Like, let's be a better person instead of just wallowing in that. I guess that was kind of the pivotal moment. Can't remember for sure what your question was, but hopefully that
No, it's a very good answer. I think you have a recalibration of your life moving forward, because as a young child, you're suppressing these memories that emotionally are charged, but you're not able to process.
Right.
And so just because things aren't processed doesn't mean they aren't prevalent in our lives and just behind the eyes. I mean, I noticed that even when I talked to you, even in passing in a short conversation, that the emotion was right there on the cusp. And I think that's important for people to understand that you could be emotional. You could be vulnerable with people you trust and people that you would like to open up to, but we need more of that.
Right.
I think when people navigate their problems by themselves, or in some cultures, it's not allowed to be on the surface, and that only hurts you.
I agree.
And you were able to do that and communicate. How has that changed your life since? Has it made you more vulnerable, more empathetic, more emotional? What are some of the benefits that you've realized after going through that process?
I think there's been a lot more benefits to anything negative that could have come from that. I guess moving forward since then, and over the last handful of years since I've really tried to take a harsh look at myself and about where I'm going, and I think it's helped me be more open with people. And I've gotten to the point where before I was at this point of don't trust anyone ever, you know, like you just kind of build up these walls that you don't want to let down because it's comfortable and it's easy. And it finally got to the point that I was thinking, you know, I have all these nice walls that I'm fortified and I'm safe, but am I happy? You know, am I connecting with other people? Am I making a difference with other people? Like, am I just sitting here safe? You know, and life is, I think, so much more than just sitting behind your walls. I think it's helping other people was a huge one for me, just in general, but also making connections with people and realizing that there are people out there that I can benefit from and people that I can help, and just connections you can make that make life so much more fulfilling. And to make those connections takes a little bit of risk. You have to let down your barrier sometimes, and sometimes you're going to get burned from that and you're going to get betrayed, and you got to accept that that's a fact of life too. But despite moments that hurt, the amount of people that I've been able to connect to and actually improve relationships with or make new relationships with far outweighs the rare time that somebody takes advantage of your trust. I think, you know, I mean, life's not easy, and I think you are going to get hurt from time to time, but if you just live behind these walls and these barriers you've built up, you're going to miss out on so much more than you could have ever got, you know, not being open to people. And it's been kind of a roller coaster for me with that. I think I go through phases of being open and wanting to engage with people, and then other times that I'm like, you know, what's so wrong about not talking to people? What's so wrong about me just doing my own thing and shutting myself off and being safe and comfortable? And every time I do that, I'm not happy though. And so it's, I think it's kind of transformed in the last even recent past into, you know, I don't have to connect with everybody. There's a lot of people that I don't have any interest in connecting to. And I think that's fine. I think we need to be critical of our time and our connections. I think that's incredibly important. But finding settings and finding people that I think share some kind of foundational similarities or interests, or just the chance that somebody could be a good connection, I think is worth taking. I think that's greatly benefited my life. I've met a lot of people that I never would have met had I not been open to sharing a lot of personal experiences. I think, I mean, just going out and sharing everything with the world, I don't think is always the right choice, but finding people that you can trust and being able to form a positive relationship for like both of you, I think is incredibly beneficial. And you can't really do that unless you're willing to open up to people.
How do you think your life would have changed if you could have gone back and controlled if that happened or not? Do you think your life would be very different?
I think it would be entirely different. I've only ever thought about that question briefly from time to time, probably mostly because I'm grateful for what has happened. You know, it's hard things, but I'm very happy overall with where I'm at in life, and I'm very happy with the people in my lives and the life and the things in my life. I think had this sequence of events not happened, I would be an entirely different person. I don't know what I would be doing. I don't know where I'd be living. I have no idea as far as where that would be at, but I don't think it would be even similar to where it is now.
It seems like trauma accelerates wisdom in human beings when they get this new shift, this new paradigm of perspective based on life or death circumstance, right? And, you know, I've been to war 9 times, and you know, when I was a CIA guy, you know, half a dozen more times. And I've seen a lot of death and destruction, but I've seen a lot of joy and happiness in life. But that's what I always, I look at you and I find the commonality in just our shared experiences very impactful, because I feel like we know a secret that nobody else knows. And that is that if you're willing to, you know, open yourself up and you experience trauma and some significant impact in your life, that it could benefit you and not just devastate and destroy you, which a lot of people allow to happen, you know? What's next for you?
I've been thinking about that a lot lately. I think life is, a lot of life is trying to find your calling. And I think perfecting that if you have found it. And right now I'm happy with where I'm at in life, but I feel like I'm at a point where there's a part of me that wants to just help other people. And I don't really know what it is. I'm still exploring it. But as far as helping other people feel prepared, I think is a huge thing for me, because that's something that I've found a lot of comfort in, from kind of growing up, not realizing that I was dealing with trauma. I lived in a very like hyper-vigilant state all the time. And I hated that for a while. Once I realized that was a thing, I hated it. I was like, why am I always so aware of everything? And why can't I just relax? And over the last several years, I've come to the point of the most relaxed I've ever been, but it's through preparedness, I think, has been the key catalyst into changing that. But I think it was a really good base for me, because I already had a lot of that situational awareness, and it was out of paranoia, which was not good, but I was able to take that now, and it's formed a really good foundation for my preparedness and for where I'm at with that. And I think in the future, I would just like to improve upon that, and just keep progressing, but as well as trying to help other people. I'd mentioned to you in passing a while ago that I was interested in law enforcement service or military service for a long time. That was kind of in my heart of hearts what I'd wanted to do for a really long time. And I finally came to terms with, it was almost like my conscience and my intuition was fighting me on that. And I didn't feel like it was right. But I was mad about that, because I knew at one point that I was driven enough that I could succeed in those areas. And I knew in my heart that I could be successful, but at the same time, it felt wrong. And so I've navigated that for years of, you know, why is this, I think, very selfish, selfless and honorable career paths? Why shouldn't I do that? And I finally have come to terms with the fact that there are other callings and other ways to help people besides official service. And for women in particular, I think there's a lot of avenues that are overlooked to help be prepared and to help people in your community. And that's something I feel called to be able to do somehow, to either help empower women to want to protect their families or to just feel more prepared in general, whether it's a friend that I can talk to maybe help be safe in their next outing or just anything like that. But as far as where I would like my life to keep going, I would love to, you know, keep working on my personal preparedness, but also try to find outlets to help other people. I don't have a huge knowledge base or experience, but I've noticed even just a lot of friends and acquaintances that I've had are just not aware of a lot of things. And if I can even help them a little bit with life, that would be, I think, very rewarding.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about going through all the experiences that you have in your life that give you the perspective that you have right here and right now that benefit people are because of those years and years of journeying and navigating life and the difficulties of trauma. And so there's something very valuable about that. It's more than gold and diamonds and every material object on the planet. And it's so significant. So I don't know, me and you will brainstorm that. We'll figure that out. Cause I think there needs to be young, wise influencers and educators for this thing that we're talking about. Because with people need guidance, they need mentors.
Yeah.
And this field of expertise can be intimidating for a lot of people. And because you have both sides of, I mean, technical aptitude, but also life experiences that have brought you here today, I think that's so important and impactful. So I'm excited to figure that out together.
Likewise. I look forward to it.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast.
It was thank you. I'm honored to have been here and had this conversation.
It's awesome. I appreciate you. Tip of the spear.